we're going to continue looking at some basic programming methods. And in particular, what I'd like to do today is as follows. Let's assume that we have a list of numbers in which we know how many numbers there are ahead of time. So let's say I have 8 numbers. So I put in my data file the number 8, and I follow it with 8 numbers, such as 5, negative 7, 9, 3, 31, 10, 11, 8. So there we have a list of numbers in which we precede it with the number of numbers or the number of data items that are going to follow. And what we'd like to do is to find the largest number of the list. Not including this number, because this number just tells me how many numbers that I have. So I'd like to find the largest number on the list. Now, if you were a human being, how would you do that task? You are a human being. Okay? If not a computer, how would you do the task? Yes. You'd look through all the numbers. That's very, very vague. So let's be a little bit more specific. Well, you got to start somewhere, so with the first number. And what would you do with that number? Put it in your mind, okay? And then what would you do next? Very good. And at that point, what would you say to yourself? Compare the two, and whichever one is the largest, you keep it. You no longer need the first number once you have already gotten the largest number. Then you look at the next number and compare it to the largest. In other words, what we're doing is we're really running a tournament, like in a game, right? We assume the first person is the best, and that he plays the next person, and if the next person wins, then that person becomes the best, and then the winner plays the next person, and then plays the next person. Each time, whoever is the winner becomes the largest so far, the best so far. At the end, whoever is the actual winner wins. So what we're saying is, let's turn this into a little sort of algorithm. We take the first number. Now, which is the first number on this list? The 5, right? What's the purpose of this number? Just to tell us how many numbers there are. Okay? Now, if there are 8 numbers, and you make the first number the largest so far, we'll just call it largest, how many comparisons do you have to make left? 7. Okay, in other words, we need a loop that's going to go around 8 minus 1 times. Right? Whenever you have the first number is the winner so far, then you have 7 left. The purpose of this number is to tell us how many comparisons we need to do. When we know how many numbers we have ahead of time, we call that the header method, as opposed to what we've done before, which is called the trailer method. Here I give you the number of numbers ahead of time. We know how many teams there are in baseball, so therefore we know how many games they have to play to determine who is the winner. Called the header method. We then get the next number, which in this case is a negative 7, and we ask ourselves, is this number bigger than this number? If it's not, we get the next number. We don't need this number anymore, so we just get 9. And we ask, is this number bigger than the largest? And the answer is yes. So in that case, we make the largest the same thing as this number, which I'm going to call number. I no longer need that 5. We then get the next number, which happens to be a 3. Okay? And we ask, is this number greater than the largest? If not, then we just go on and get the next number. We do this a total of 8 minus 1 times, 7 times, and then at the end, whatever's in this box is the winner, and that's the largest number. Okay, so let's write that as a flowchart. First thing we're going to do is to start. And then we pick up the first number on the list, which happens to be the 8. Now that's not our number, that stands for the number of items to be processed. I'm going to call that N. N as the number of items that are going to be processed. That's the header method. I read it right away in the beginning, ahead of time. So it's the head, header method. Now I need to keep track of how many numbers are left to go around. So I now have a variable called I, which is 1. We're ready to read the first number. And we read that number. But since it's the largest number, because it's the very first one, I can right away put it into the variable largest, since I'm assuming the first number is the largest number so far. So I'm going to read the next number on the list and put it right into largest. And now I'm going to ask myself, am I finished? Here's the loop. Am I finished? Well, how will I know if I'm finished? Remember, I is going to be used to count how many numbers we've processed. N is the number of numbers. So how many numbers do we need to process? N minus 1, right? Because we've already done the first one. We got the first one in, so there's 7 more left to go. In other words, we want to go through the loop as long as I is less than N. When I is equal to N, we are done. So we're going to make a decision. Is I less than N? If it's not, that means we're finished. So if this is false, then we can print out whoever was the winner, the largest, and we can stop. If I is less than N, then we need to read the next number. We pick up the next number on the list, which in our case is now the number 7, negative 7. And what do we want to do at this point? We've gotten the first number. We said it's the largest. We've just picked up the second number. We call it number. So what do we want to do? Compare them to see which is bigger. So we have another decision. And we ask ourselves, is the number that we just read in greater than the largest? Now, if that's true, if the number we just read in is greater than the largest, what happens? It becomes the new largest. It wins. Right? It becomes, so I'll say, largest equals the number. It becomes the new winner. Correct? And then, going up, because I'm running out of room, we say I equals I plus 1. Just picked up the next number. And go around again to see if we're finished. What about if this is false? And what do? We just bypass that statement and go on to the next number. So if the number that we just picked up is bigger than the largest so far, it becomes the next largest number. And if it's not, and in any event, I now becomes I plus 1, because we've just read the next number, the second number, and we go around to see if we are finished. Okay? Again, as usual, you should take this home, this flowchart home, make those two boxes. We have another box that we have to have N. Remember, N is 8. Make the three boxes, list your numbers, put your finger on the start, go through it. At the end, we should have the largest number there. Is that method clear? Yeah? So if it's clear, let's now turn that into a program. I believe you have it in your handout called Find Largest. Now, finding the largest number is a very important task that you're going to use many times. I might use it to find out who got the highest grade on each test. Okay, you might want to find out which is the biggest data point in some exam, in some piece of data that you've taken. So finding the largest number is a very common task. So it pays for us to develop a function called find largest, whose purpose it is to find the largest number among n numbers. We have to give it n, we tell it how many numbers we want it to examine, and if it does its job correctly, it will give us back the largest number. In this case, we want to give it the number 8, and it should come back and tell us 31. So I want to create a function, here it is its prototype, called find largest. Once you do this, you'll be able to use this in many assignments, or in wherever you need to do it. It receives an argument, an integer. In our case, it'll be the number 8, representing the number of items to be processed. And it returns to us a float, because these numbers, no one said these numbers have to be integers. Maybe it's 3.7 or 31.8. So it will return back to us the largest. So it's given an integer, and it gives us back a float. And the way I intend on using this is as follows. I'm going to, in my main, do something like enter the number of items in the list, pick up n, just as I did up there, and then say the largest number that entered was find largest n. So we will call upon find largest. It will be given n, in our case 8. It will go do its thing, determine which is the largest number of the next 8 numbers, send that number back in its place, just like square root sent back the square root of a number in its place, and then it gets printed because it's part of a cout statement. Or I can use it somewhere else in my program. So this is how I intend on using it. Now, of course, this main is a very trivial program. Okay, the whole purpose of the main is to do what? What is this main? This little piece of code here that I wrote from lines 13 through 24. What's the purpose of it? To call upon the function. In our case, it's just a dummy program meant to test whether find largest works. In the real world, I don't think you can write such a simple baby program. You'll use find largest in some other much larger program to find the number, the largest number in a test, you know, blah, 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 and a whole bunch of other tasks that might be done. This main really has no purpose other than to test find largest. The whole idea of writing functions is that to create a bunch of building blocks that we're sure work, and once we know they work, we can then use them, putting them together to make something much bigger. So the way one tests functions, the right way to do it, and they do this in the real world. If you have, a component of a space shuttle, okay, they don't just put all the components together and then just test the space shuttle. What do? First, each component is tested independently, separately. Once they know the component works, then they put it all together and then they test the whole thing. In the same way, what I'm doing here is I'm developing a program, a function called find largest. That's a component that you're going to use for a long time to come. I simply want to test it to see if it works. So I write a small main program that does nothing else than call find largest and find out whether it works. That's called a program stub, S-T-U-B. A stub is simply a small piece of code that you use for testing purposes. So whenever you have a large task to do, and I say write a bunch of functions, what you probably want to do is write a function independently. Test that function by incorporating it into a small main, see if it works. Then, once you know it works, you go on to do the next one, and the next one, then you put them all together in the right order, and hopefully they all produce the total result. So now we can look at find largest. So find largest is a function which returns the largest number of items in a list given the number of items. Given, in this case, n. So the header says float find largest int n. N, remember, is the called a what? What is n called?
Number.
It's a number, but what is it called? I don't hear. Not an argument. A parameter. This one is the argument. This one here is the parameter. And whether just because I happen to call them both letter N, remember, is just coincidental. They could be, don't have to be called that at all. Now, if you look in my program here, in my flowchart, we had variables I, we had variables largest, and we had variable number. Okay? So I create int I, float number and largest, and then we begin. Enter the first number, and I put it right away into largest. Now I'm going to start a for loop. Now here are the parts of the for loop. Remember, a for loop has an initial value, it has a test value, and it has an increment. Right? That's for I equals 1, I less than n, I plus plus. That's the part of the for loop. The rest of it, this one, and this one, is the body of the for loop. That's what we want the for loop to do. There it is. For I equals 1, I less than n, I plus plus, or plus plus I. Get the next number, put it into number. If number is greater than largest, largest equals number. And go back around again. And that's exactly what we have here. Get the next number. If number is greater than largest, largest is equal to the number. And then go back to the top of the for loop, I plus plus. So what I have is circled in the white, this is this piece of code right here. And then this part here is these three. Okay? So if I run this, enter the number of items on the list, it said was 8. Now it calls the function. Enter the first number, which was 5. It put that into the variable called largest. Next number, negative 7. Next number, 9. Each time it's comparing, 3. Next number, 31. Next number, 10. Next number, 11. Next number, 8. At this point, it's finished the loop, goes back to the main program, and says that the largest number that was entered was 31, as we expect. Yeah. Sure, why not? Instead of what would you do? What would you sure you do? What would you do if I change this assignment? Okay. Let's save this as. Save as find largest 2. Let's work that right out now and change it so it goes to the file. Okay? So I don't mess up my original one, I'll mess up this one. Okay? First thing, before we go any further, let's create that data file. Okay? Let's create that data file that contains all those numbers in them. So let me go out of this for a moment. Okay? Let me go into my C++ programs. And let's create a new data file. Come on. Small machine. Let's call text document. Let's call it find largest 2 data.txt. Okay? And let's put those numbers in there. 8, 5, negative 7, 9, 3, 31, 10, 11, 8. File, save. The data file now exists. Okay. What's the first thing we do when we convert a program from getting its input from the keyboard to one that's going to read from a file? Almost like a cookbook. What's the first thing you're going to do? Number sign include, which one? F string. Okay. F string. Okay. Now, what do we do next? We have to declare the file. How do we declare a file? You almost have this as a cookbook. I gave you that sheet. What's the next line? IF stream. What do you want to call the file? Should we give it a name? What should we give it a name? Numbers. Sounds good to me. Whatever you call it, it's fine with me. IF stream numbers. Anything else goes on this line? Semicolon. Good. And what goes next in the cookbook? I can't hear you. Numbers dot open parentheses, whatever we called it before. What did I call it before? I called it find largest two data dot txt, close this, semicolon, but of course what did I leave out? The double quotes that go here and here. Okay. Since we're getting it from a data file, do we need this line? Oops, get back in there. Do we need this line, since we're getting it from a data file? Do we need to prompt the user? No. There's no user, so let's just get rid of that line. Okay. How do I change this line? No, it's not called infile. She chose a different name for it. Just because I used infile before, that's not the name. What did you call your file? Numbers, right? That's what it says here. It's numbers. So therefore, it's no longer CN. It is now numbers. Good. Do we need this statement? Yes, we still want the results. Okay. Do I need this statement? No. Because again, there's no one there. Okay, what should this statement change to? Numbers. Okay. Of course, by the way, the name numbers here is probably not exactly a good name because it's easy to confuse it with another variable called number. Right? Someone will confuse this, but that's what we decided to erase. That's, I'm not going to change it. Better in the future to use something else. Maybe we'll call the numbers, we'll call it N, and we'll call it whatever. You just choose a name that won't at 1 o'clock at night confuse you and get you frustrated when you don't see the difference between the two of them. In any event, okay. Do I need this line? No. And this gets, of course, changed to numbers. Anything else? Looks fine to me. Let's compile it, make sure we didn't make any silly mistakes, which we did. Okay? What's the mistake on this line? Doesn't have to be in the main. Can do it here. Where's your cookbook? Where's the sheet with the cookbook about reading data from a file? You have that cookbook handy? Let me see what it says. How to read from a file. Okay? Numbers that include F-S-T-R-E-A-M. Good. I-F-S-T-R-E-A-M. Numbers. There's nothing wrong with that statement. Why doesn't it like that statement? No. The mistake is up here. We didn't remember to close it yet. There's a mistake here which I'm not seeing. Numbers that include F-S-T-R-E-A-M. That's fine. I-F-S-T-R-E-A-M, numbers. Something wrong here. Sometimes I get frustrated too. I-F-S-T-R-E-A-M, what is wrong with this? Sorry, what? Why not? It's complaining that it doesn't like I-F-S-T-R-E-A-M. Huh? We'll have a problem if we do it in the main because then it won't be able to use it over here. This statement I can put in the main. See, this statement I can put in the main. Let's just do this. Let's cut it from here and put it in here. Just see what happens. See, it doesn't like it there either. Then you won't be able to use it. Yeah, watch what happens here. If I do this, but what is going on here? Yes, okay, see, it does not like does not like, because it doesn't recognize this, that there's something wrong here. There it is, just put it in the wrong place. Remember I told you that you need to have this using namespace standard, because otherwise it makes certain assumptions, doesn't make assumptions about something. So we got to have that statement first. Okay, again, frustrating. The other statement really doesn't make a difference where it goes. But we need to have this statement. Let me just separate it out here. This statement needs to be not in the main. It's a declaration. And remember, when you declare something, they become local variables. If you were to declare it in the main, then I couldn't use numbers in the function. So I've got to declare it global. Now, this is legal. The only time I let you use global variables is when they refer to file names. Because lots of times you have functions that need to get to different files, but not to variables. So now, whether you do this here, or now if you move this back there, I really don't care. This could be here or there. Let me just, again, make this thing look nice, so it's pretty. It makes no difference where you actually open the file. What makes the difference is where you declare the file. And the file needs to be declared globally so that both the main and the find largest function can find it. Okay? So now, there's no other changes that we need to do. And yes, we should, technically, you are quite correct that we should have put in, it's a good style, okay, to close the file before we're finished it. When we're finished, if we don't, the system will close it automatically for us. To close the file, what do? Just to be 100% correct. Numbers dot close, open, close, semicolon. If we don't do that, the system will do that automatically for us. Okay? It's just a good habit to get into. So you're 100% right, I should put it in there, but we really didn't need to do that. In any event, let's see if it works now. Let's compile it. And it compiled. And zero error, zero warning. As you can see, if I give you a little more room here, you can see it compiled, everything's nice and neat. Now we can run it. Largest number that was entered was 31. No hands off, no user, totally from a file. See how you convert it? It's really very simple. And we got a little distracted there by a frustrating thing, but other than that, cookbook approach to this is quite simple. Any questions? So there are two things important here. One is the technique of how to find the largest number of a list, something you're going to be using over and over again, and the fact that we can write this as a small program stub to test out the function, and now you've got it. Okay, while I have you looking at the screen, sometimes when you are programming, you come across something like float, I'm just taking this in, and you're not exactly sure what's the correct rules of grammar for it, or what does it mean, okay? Your system should have a built-in help. If you go to help, and you just go C++ reference, or if you simply hit function key 1, it should bring up for you a reference manual for that word, for that keyword, which you can then explore and see what this is such a simple one, so there's not much, you know, things here, okay, but here are some other examples of how it's used. But if you had something more complicated, let's say you forgot exactly how to use a for statement. Okay? Again, function key 1 or the help will bring up help for you, and often it gives you an example of how it's used. So that's sort of right there, built into the system to let you have help on C++. As you get more sophisticated, I'll show you a lot more things that you can look at. You may not have noticed this, but if you go to the management window, normally you're in projects workspace, and there is the whatever file you're using. If you go into symbols, okay, there are various entries. And if you click on those entries, it's helpful. For example, one thing here tells us that we have two global functions that are used throughout our program. One of them is called Find Largest, and one of them is called Main. And what's particularly neat, especially as you get to larger and larger programs, is that you can jump right away. For example, if I right-click on Find Largest, say jump to declaration, it right away takes me to that. And if I say jump to declaration, oops, should, but it doesn't. I have to figure out why, but it should jump right to each one. Maybe because I'm not using a project. Similarly, if you look at global variables, remember there's one global variables, numbers. Okay? It's because I'm not using a project, it doesn't work. If you use a project the way I told you to use it, then you'd be able to jump straight to the declaration. So this gives you a list on the side of all the variables in your program, all the declarations, all the functions, and it sort of makes it easy to find where they are. Let's get out of the way for a while. And let's look at if statements and decision statements, since we're now using them. And it's important that we know how to use them properly. Decisions, we use a series of relational operators. The relational operators are less than or equal, greater than or equal, equality, and not equal. Those are the relational operators. Now, when you have arithmetic operators, let's say you go 5 plus 5, the result is a number. Well, in that case, an integer, right? What is the result of saying x is less than y? Okay? Well, there are two results. One result could be true versus false, depending on whether x or y, which is bigger. But another way of saying this, false is 0, and true is the value 1. What do I mean by that? Suppose I say int z, and then I say z should be assigned the value of x is less than y. If x is 20 and y is 0, then z is going to be 0 as well, because that was false. 20 is not less than 0. If on the other hand x is 0 and y is 100, z would be 1. And if you printed z out, that would be the value would be 1. Does everyone see that? Okay. There is a new type that we can use in C++, and that's called the Boolean type, bool z, instead of saying int z. In this case, if x is 0 and y is 100, z would be false, F-A-L-S-E, that's its value. And if x was 0 and y was 100, then z would be true. So there's a relationship, which we're going to see in a minute, between these values and these values. These are integers, but they have the meaning of false and true. And this are Boolean values that mean false and true. If you say Boolean, you're going to be using the words true and false. If you're going to be using ints, which is an old style, a C style, as opposed to a C++ style, then you use zeros and ones. Okay? Now, let me just tell you another little bizarre thing. Suppose I say Boolean Z, and then I say Z equals negative 35. What is the value of z? The answer is as follows. In C++, 0 is considered to be false, and any other number is considered to be true. So as little sense as this makes, z is considered to be true now. Okay? So 0 is evaluated as false. Non-zero is evaluated as true. We'll hold that thought for a while and we'll see how we make use of this. But now we know of a new type called the bool type, or boolean, which is useful for true and false values. We'll get there in a minute. Now, in addition to the relational operators, we have what are called logical operators. And they are the two vertical bars is called OR. The two ampersands, not one, and be careful because there is another operator which is one of them, but is called AND. And the exclamation point is what we call NOT. Now, let's first review some things that you know about logical operators. You may have had this when you took logic in high school. Okay? If I have two clauses, like I say, today is Monday, and the second clause is, it is now evening. If I use the OR logical operator, I say, it is the case that today is Monday, or it is evening, that would be a true statement. If I was to say to you, it is the case today is Tuesday, or it is evening, that is a false statement. To summarize that, we say as follows. If I have one clause, let's call it A, and another clause, which I call B. If A is true and B is true, then A or B is also true. Does that make sense? Similarly, if A is true and B is false, or B is false and A is true, that is still, the OR makes them true. Only in the case where both clauses are false, does it make the OR false. Now let's take the AND. If I say to you, it is the case that today is Monday, and it is morning, that's a true statement. But if I say to you, it is the case that today is Monday, and it is evening, that's a false statement. So, and is true if both are true, but it is false in every other case. And finally, if I say to you, it is not the case that today is Tuesday. Today is Tuesday is false. Not false is true. Suppose I say to you, it is not the case that today is Monday. Today is Monday is true. Not true is false. So, not A is false when A is true, and true when A is false. This table, to remind you, is called a truth table. And we will be using more complicated forms of the truth table in a moment. Now, the word and, A-N-D, has two meanings in the English language. One of them is a connector between sentences. Just connects two pieces together. Another meaning is in the meaning that we have here. It asserts something being true or false. Why do I say that? A very common mistake that people write. If you want to say the mathematical expression x is less than 5, I mean it's greater than 5, and less than 100,
Let's say less than 100.
Equal less than, what's if we want to write that expression? You cannot say X is less than 5 and X is greater than 5 and less than or equal to 100. Here you're using the word and like it's English. That's not correct. Can't do this. You need to say X is greater than 5 and X is less than or equal to 100. You can never use the and or the or unless there are two complete clauses on either side, which you don't have here. Here's one clause, but what is less than or equal to 100? There's no other, it's got to be X is less than or equal to 100. You must have two clauses, whether it's in a while statement, whether it's an if statement. When you use the logical and or the logical or, you're not using English language. You're not just making a sentence. You're actually doing arithmetic. You're comparing this. You're comparing this. Then you're making, are they both true? That makes it true. Is one of them false? That makes the whole thing false. So there's got to be something complete on either side. Now, if you again look at your hierarchy chart, which you have at the end of the book, in one of the appendices, you'll make sure you know the order of operations. Okay, let's look at it, because it's a little tricky here. And so you're going to find that you're going to use parentheses a little bit more often than you think when you use logical operators, because the order of operations can be confusing. Remember this chart. Okay. Now, let's look at the order. Let's add this to our repertoire of order of operations. Not is very high up on the table. Like a negative sign. It goes first. Then you have your multiplication, division, mod, your addition, subtraction. Skip this line. Then, in other words, all arithmetic occurs before you do any of these comparisons. But all of these comparisons are done, okay, before you do equal, equal, or not equal. Okay? Then you do the ands, and the ors are done last. Let's review that. Okay? These are the ones you know so far. Okay? The not does first. Then comes the arithmetic. Then comes the greater than, less than, greater than, equal, less than or equal. Then comes the equals, equals, and the not equals. Then comes the and. And finally comes the or. Okay, keep that in mind. Yes. Sorry, what? Very high up. They're here, they are. They're together with the not. As you know, negatives are applied first. Positive and negative signs are applied first. And the not is applied first. Okay? Incidentally, plus plus and minus minus are very high up on the chart as well. Okay? Don't forget about those for now. Then comes the arithmetic. Then comes, don't do these. This is, we haven't learned that. Then come these. Then come these. Then comes this. And then comes this. And don't leave out the two of them, because they mean something else when they're totally different. Nothing to do with what we're learning now when they're used alone. Okay? Make sure you know them. Okay. Let's see if we've put this together in our minds. Suppose I say 5 is less than 3. What is the meaning of that statement? False. Right? That's false. What is the value of that statement? Exactly. 0. In other words, were I to say X should be assigned 5 is less than 3, X would be 0. The meaning is false, the value is 0. Does everyone see the difference? Do a few more. 4 is less than 1, or 5 is greater than 2. What is the meaning of that statement? True. Because even though 4 is less than 1 is false, 5 is greater than 2 is true, and false or true is true. And by the way, the order of precedence, how would you know what you do first? Remember, less than and greater than were higher up on the chart before the or. So first we do this and evaluate it. That's false. Then we evaluate this. That's true. And now we say false or true. The result is true. And what is the value of this statement? If I was to assign it to a variable. 1. Good. Excellent. Okay, here's another one. What are we going to do first in this problem? What is the order of precedence that's always done first? Parentheses. In the parentheses, which comes first? Equals equals or the or? Equals equals was higher than the or. So, A equals equals 5 or A equals equals 6. Now, do we know what A is? So we have no idea whether that's going to be... Now, they can't both be true, right? But they could both be false. So we have no idea whether that's true or false. So let's hold on to that for a moment. It's either true or false. Then we're going to do 9 is less than 1. True or false? That's false. So if that's false, does it make a difference what's in the parentheses? No, because the and is going to make it false no matter what. Right? No matter what. Therefore, this expression is going to be, have a meaning of false, and its value is 0. Now, when you look at this expression, you could have figured this out without even looking at what's in the parentheses. Right? Which is what we ultimately did. We just looked at the last clause and said, oh, that obviously it makes the whole thing false, no matter what's in the parentheses. Right? That's called short-circuiting. A short-circuit evaluation. C will look at an expression, and it will come to the conclusion in the easiest way possible. Okay? Now, suppose I did the following. Suppose I took that expression, and I did this, and I said A is assigned the value of 5. Is this expression now going to be true or false? Okay. Again, let's remind ourselves the order of operations. What comes first? And or? And is done first. Is that right? So if I look at this expression, let's see. This piece here is true, correct? This piece here is false, right? And this piece here is false, correct? Now, if we're going to do this first, are we not? False and false is what? False. And then we're going to do true or false, which becomes true. So the value, the meaning now is true. Parentheses, because the order of the precedence rules are strange here, you might not see this. That's why it's always important for you to use parentheses whenever you're not sure. Okay, yes? It does make logical sense according to the rules of logic. which you may have taken in high school or may not have, or may take in a philosophy course, the rules of logic, just like, it makes as much sense, think of this for a moment, why does multiplication and division come before addition and subtraction? Does that make any sense to you? No, but it's the rules, right? Okay, well, this is the rules. There's actually a reason for this, just like there is a reason why multiplication and division comes before addition and subtraction. It has to do with all the things that you've learned back there about associativity and, you know, how you put together algebra. It comes about, you can derive these things. They're not just made up. Someone didn't wake up one morning, a brick fell on their head, and they said, oh, multiplication and division comes before addition and subtraction. Although they want you to learn it that way, whether you like it or not. Right? For the UK, pretty please my dear Aunt Sally, and that's all the kids. In the same way, the reason the precedent rules are this way, there's a logical reason, but we don't have to go through that. So for now, it's the rules, and that's what we do. Be very careful. Here's a bizarre one. 3 and 1. What is the meaning of that statement? True. Not true and true. The meaning is true. Because 3, let me erase it here, is non-zero, so that's considered to be true. This is non-zero, so it's considered to be true. True and true is, and if I was to assign this to a variable called y, what would be in y? 1. Not 25. What is the meaning of not 25? No. 25 is non-zero. So therefore 25 is true. So not true is, so this is equal to false. Does everyone see that? Now, suppose I said x equals not 25. What is x? 0. Yes, everybody with me? A few more. First. It's the first thing you're going to do. Parentheses. Therefore, this now becomes 6. What's the next thing you're going to do? No, that's not the next thing that you're going to do. The 3 is greater than 5. Okay? You're going to do, because remember that comes, these two come before this. So this is going to, and then we go from left to right when there's a tie. So 3 is greater than 5, true or false? False. The next thing it's going to do is this. 5 is greater than 7. That is false. Then it's going to do 6 equals equals 6, and that is true. Okay, so it's now true or false and false. What do we do next? The and. So therefore, this becomes false. Finally, we do true or false, which is, so the meaning of this whole long expression is true, and its value, if I was to assign this whole thing to W, let's say, what would W be? 1. Catching on? So, a moment. What is that? The meaning is, what's its value? No. Its value is 17. Its value is 17. If I was to say x equals 17, what would be next? No. 17. Got it? You had a question.
That statement equals one. When
I don't know. We'll get to it at some point. There may be some applications. Okay. Four is less than one, or four. Four is less than one. Oh, I'm sorry. Or four. I left that in. Everybody think about this for a moment. That is true. Very good. Four is less than one is false. Four is true, just like 17 was true. False or true is true. And the value of this whole thing is one. Yes? Here's another one. X equals 12 and X equals 7. It has to be false. Good. Because there's no way X could be 12 and 7 at the same time. So one of those or both of them are false. Therefore the whole expression is false. 0 or 5. That is true. And its value is 1. And finally, not 0 is true, and its value is 1. Let's do a practical example of where Boolean true and false come in very useful. Just the right time. We have elections in the United States between various people, none of which know are worthy of leading this country. But in any event, all three of them, or four of them, or five of them, they're all the same. Okay, in any event, so most of you are going to vote. I assume most of you are citizens. Okay? I assume most of you are over. Well, what do you need to do to vote in the United States? Huh? You have to be registered, okay. That just proves that you've met the real conditions. Come on, citizens of the United States, what do you need to vote? You have to be over 18. That's called the age of majority. Okay, when you reach 18, the magic number. Okay? Vote, you can die for your country, but you can't drink. Okay. So you gotta be over 18. What else? You gotta be a citizen, right? Anything else? Man, people here have not taken civics, they don't know social studies. We really do need a core in the college. I would hope that none of you know this, because if you're convicted of a felony, you can't vote. Okay? So if you are not convicted of a felony, and you are a citizen, and you are over the age of majority, you're permitted to vote. That's not too complicated, is it? Okay, so let's go to a different system. Let's go to the British system. Now, in the British system, very different than the United States. As you know, there is a House of Lords and a House of Commons. Ordinary people get elected to the House of Commons, make all the laws, and the Queen has to sign it. And who gets elected to the House of Lords? How do you get to be a member of the House of Lords? Royalty? Okay, that's part of it. Although the Queen cannot be a member of the House of Lords. So you guys don't know your history. Okay, it's really pathetic. It really is. Huh? You're all science majors. So does that mean that we could be ignorant of the rest of the world? Does that mean you're all a bunch of geeks and nerds and know nothing at all than science? So let me remind you that a long, long time ago, okay, in England, there were various kings. And the kings ruled because of what was known as the divine right of kings. What did that mean? It meant God made me king, and I am the one who makes all the decisions, and if you don't like it, tough. Off with your head. Right? Once upon a time, there was a King John who wanted to have a war with his enemies. And so he wanted to raise money from all the other important people in his country. How does he make important people? He makes them into knights, right? Knocks them over the head with a sword and says, I dub thee sir knight. Or he gives them a bunch of land and says, you are a duke or a baron. And he says, in return for me making you a duke or a baron, I want money so I can raise an army. And they said, no. And he said, pretty please. And they said, no. And eventually, what happened? They signed something called the Magna Carta. Does that word sound familiar? Yes? And in the Magna Carta, it said that the king can only rule with the consent of the lords. The plain people, which made up 90% of the civilization, were the peasants, the peons. They had no say about anything. They were there to work. They were the property. But the lords now had gotten King John to sign away the divine right of kings. And in order for him to go to war, he had to now get the advice and consent of the lords. And so there was now something called the House of Lords, where they sat and they debated issues. And the king would come and say, please. And eventually they would say yes or no. And the king, of course, could stack the House of Lords by making more lords that saw things his way. Sounds just like Hillary and Obama today with superdelegates and delegates. Okay? If I promise you things, you become a delegate, you vote for me, and then I become the king. Or Queen Hillary, or whatever. Okay. In any event, then what happened in history? Eventually, in France, what happened? The plain, ordinary people had enough. And they decided to have a revolution. Correct? And when they came to Queen Antoinette and they said to her, the people are starving and they want this and that. What did she say to them? Famous thing. She said, let them eat cakes. And what did they say back to her? Off with your head. Remember the guillotine? And they chopped her head off. And now all of a sudden we have the beginning of a democracy. Now people in England were getting very nervous about this because they knew that their heads were going to be rolling next. Because the French didn't just chop off the head of the queen. They chopped off every single head that they could find lying loose in the street. A bunch of old ladies sat there and knitted while they were chopping people's heads off. History is so interesting. So in England, they now created a House of Commons for the common people. And eventually, that evolved into the House of Commons making all the rules. And all the House of Lords do is debate. Okay? They just debate, they scream, they yell, they make big speeches. They have no power. And today in England, it's the House of Commons. Okay. So now that you've learned, and of course then a little bit later there was a King George who treated the Americans very poorly. And the Americans said, no taxation without something I tell my kids all the time. Okay? And the Americans didn't like it. And what did they do? They had a revolution. And they weren't going to make the mistake of having a king. And they weren't going to make the mistake of having a House of Lords, because all people are created equal. And so we don't have a House of Commons. We just have a Congress. Of course, even in the United States, the states that had lots and lots of people thought that they should have more votes than the states that had very few people but very big farms and were very wealthy. And they fought that argument out, and therefore eventually they settled on having a House of Representatives and a Senate. See, history makes beautiful sense. We put it all together. In any event, let's say you were a British citizen and we had to determine whether or not you could be a voter. In other words, what I want to determine is the following. I have a variable called voter. So I'm going to say bool voter. And then I'm going to somehow or other determine the rules for whether or not that's true or false. And I want to say, if voter, okay, C out, you may vote. Else, C out, get lost. And so I need to fill this in. I need to have something here that is of the form voter equals. I got to fill that in. But before we do that, voter is true or false. If this is true, remember how ifs work. If what's in the parentheses is true, we will do this. If this turns out to be false, we'll do this. Now, even if I didn't fill this in, doesn't this make, can't you, doesn't this read like English now? If voter, you may vote. Else, get lost. Very easy to understand. Of course, I need to now fill in that part. So you have to know what is it that allows you or does not allow you to vote in merry old England. So, who knows the answer to that? Bunny? Well, it stands to reason that you have to be over the age of majority, 18 or older. Right? So we know that's to be true. Your age has to be greater than 18. Anything else? You have to be a citizen. Okay, I'll leave that one out for now because I'm assuming all the people who are going up to the election polls are citizens now. You can't be in jail. You can't be a prisoner. And there's one thing they have that we don't have. You can't be insane. Clearly, that's not true in the United States. Okay? You can certainly be insane and still vote. In fact, the majority of our electorate is insane. And we deserve what we get. So you can't be a... Let's get that again. Your age has to be greater than or equal to... And you cannot be a prisoner. You cannot be insane. And there's one more thing you can't be. You can't be a member of the House of Lords. You can't be a peer. In other words, one of the interesting things is that the Queen and the Prince cannot vote in England. Neither can all the sirs and the barons, because in England your status is much more important than anything else. How high your nose can go up is what counts. And your illustrious ancestry. By the way, how do you become a peer? The general term is a peer, P-E-E-R. Either you are the firstborn son, or the Queen dubs you, as she did for the Beatles and so on, Sir Knight. Okay? You get down on one knee, she smacks you on the shoulder with a sword, hopefully not too hard. She's an old lady anyway. And she says, I dub thee Sir Knight. The difference is that if she dubs you a knight, it doesn't get passed on to your descendants. But if you are an inherited, if you inherit it, it's the firstborn son of the oldest. And they have this complicated rules of inheritance. In any event, how do I summarize everything I just said? Very easily. You are a voter if your age is greater than or equal to 18. Right? And you are not a prisoner or insane or a peer. Now look at that logical statement, which actually reads like English. Now that I've told you the rules. It makes sense. It says you are a voter. A voter, it's true if your age is greater than equal to 18, and you are not a prisoner, insane, or a peer. Now let's see if it works out the logic. Suppose we have a 17-year-old normal person. Okay? This would be false. Well, let's start from here, because we do this first, right? So therefore, this would be false, your normal person. So this is false, and this is false. That makes all this false. Not false makes it true. True and, but you're 17, so that makes that false. False and true is, so therefore, you are false. You're not a voter. Now let's take another case. Let's take a 20-year-old who's insane. Okay? Not in jail, walking the streets, so that's false. This is true. False or true is true. You're not a peer, you're a normal person. Therefore, true or false is still true. Not true is, this is true. True and false is, so a 20-year-old insane person, voter is false, get lost. Try it out with anything else. Let's say someone is both a peer and they're a prisoner, they're in jail, and they're a peer, and they're 35 years old. So let's see. Prisoner is true. They're not insane. So that is true or false is true. Peer is true. True or true is true. Not true is, they're 35. True and false is false. So it always works out. So a logical statement, okay, can be evaluated, and then we can make decisions based on that. And we do this with clarity. It's very, very clear this way. Okay? Now, I could have done this. I could have, instead of doing this, I could have just taken this whole big thing and stick it into these parentheses. It would work just as well, but I think that's clearer the way I had it before. Especially when we have very big conditions. Okay? Now, one of the problems with big conditions in general is how do we know under what... suppose I was to ask you, summarize this for me. Under what conditions is this true? Under what conditions is it false? Or any other complicated decision? How do you look at a logical expression and decide the conditions that makes it true and the condition that makes it false? The answer to that is to create a truth table, which we will do next time. The purpose of a truth table is to summarize or analyze a logical expression and determine under what conditions, under what starting conditions it's true, under what starting conditions it's false, and I will do this next time. We'll build a truth table for this expression.